Today's podcast is brought to you by Visa. With the capacity to process over 65,000 transaction messages every second, Visa has been bringing innovations to the way we pay for over 60 years. Imagine a world where, instead of just tapping to pay with Visa, you had to wait for everyone in front of you to cut a check. Everywhere you went. Imagine how much fun it'd be trying to track down your cousin in Milwaukee for league dues. That's why Visa's vision is to be the best way to pay and be paid everywhere so you won't have to. Whatever your goals are, Visa makes paying fast and easy. The only thing left to figure out is, where would you like to be? Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Everyone, good morning. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We got lots going on this morning. The undefeated Patriots got a new wide receiver, which made Tom Brady a very happy man yesterday. Meanwhile, the undefeated Niners, not to be outdone, they went out and got themselves a new wide receiver as well. How high is their ceiling now? We'll discuss that. And Chris Bosch will be in studio to discuss the NBA's opening night last night, and that is where we start this morning. What an opening night it was. LeBron and the Lakers taking on Kawhi and the Clippers, and the King struck early. The fadeaway over the claw, two of his 18 points on the night. How about new Laker Anthony Davis getting in the mix? The Brow finishing with 25 and 10. But none of it matched what Kawhi did. The reigning finals MVP came out strong. He came out focused, and he came out on fire after missing his first two shots. Kawhi finished with a game-high 30 points, pardon me, to go along with 6 rebounds and 5 assists. Clippers go on to win 112-102. Here is Kawhi Leonard after the game.
You see what they did last year. They was an 8th seed, 7th seed playoff team. These guys fight. They fight hard every single night. And, just because I'm here or Paul's here, we're not going to stop.
What happened in this game last night?
Well, on the Clippers side of things, it looked a hell of a lot like the Clippers of last year, but just with a league MVP caliber player in Kawhi Leonard, who last night, you tweeted it after the first half scene, it was true after the second half as well, was the best player on the court last night. Mm-hmm. He was sensational. The Clippers bench mob was great, their defense was very good, and Kawhi, particularly in that marvelous second quarter, was hitting difficult shot after difficult shot, mid-range shot after mid-range shot. Didn't really matter what the defense was. That was the Clippers side of things. To me, that is a lot more standard, if you will, than what we saw from the Lakers. Because what you saw from the Lakers, they can say it's one game, and it is one game, and it is early, and they do have to gel, all that's true. What you saw from the Lakers, though, was much more concerning in this regard. The Lakers have one path to being the team they're supposed to be, the team they can be. And that path is having two of the 8 best players in the world, Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And last night, LeBron James did not look like that, did not play like that, and he was careless with the ball, he was inefficient from the field, he was almost non-existent in the second half. And the reality for LA is, if LeBron is not still an all-NBA, top 8 league MVP candidate guy, then they don't have any path to getting to where they want to get to. You don't want to overreact to one game, and you don't want to overreact to Anthony Davis being a little non-existent in the second half, losing to the Clippers even though they didn't have their second best player. But that was a poor showing by the Lakers, most notably LeBron, and an excellent job by the Clippers, see, without their second best player, Paul George.
Yeah, I think we have to be careful as far as the NBA, Jenna. We're seeing player movement like never before. LeBron talked about the new NBA is back. That's with the duos compared to what we've seen as far as people teaming up since he's went to Miami, as far as 3 players, star players being on one team. So 43.6% of all the players in the league, player movement, new players. So LeBron has always gotten off to a slow start. So I can understand what you're saying in last night's game, but every time he's transitioned, and I know this is his second year with the Lakers, but this team is transitioning. To get this team to where they are, him and AD have not spent a lot of time. To me, AD got physically a little bit tired. He got worn out. Yeah. They tried to run the offense to him at the beginning of the game, and it was exciting. He is a monster, but it's the first game of the season. He's not in conditioning to be able to have that type of workload. So, for me, great win by the Clippers. They played closer to the style for which they played. Their bench contributed 60 points, right?
Yes.
They averaged 50 last year. They were the only NBA team last season to average 50. So to say that we were surprised, no, we can't say we're surprised. But as good as this Clipper team without Paul George, that to me was the overall surprise.
The 60 to 19 was the bench scoring in this game. And understand, of course, the Lakers without Kuzma, who's going to be part of, I think in the beginning, their bench scoring. But Frank Vogel also...
Kuzma and Rondo.
And Rondo. And the reason I bring up Kuzma is because Kuzma, I think, is going to be their leading scorer off the bench. Rondo,
yes,
more of a facilitator off the bench. But this is where the Clippers, to me, are vulnerable, is as great as they are defensively, they do not have a real rim protector. Montrezl Harrell is a hell of a player, but given his size, he's not a rim protector. You saw the Lakers and Anthony Davis taking advantage of that in the first half and totally unable to take advantage of it in the second half. And again, it is October 23rd. I am not going to overreact to any of this, but it is critically important for the Lakers that they get off to a good start given the way their schedule falls this year. And when we talk about the West being as jam-packed at the top as we think it's going to be, you're going to have four battles with the Clippers this year. You got one of them when they didn't have Paul George. You were up a dozen points instantly, and then aside from a flurry at the end of the third quarter, the Lakers never really played well from that moment forward.
But the narrative around LeBron James coming into the season opener was he's had his longest offseason to rest. He finally has veterans around him. He doesn't have to spend the offseason even getting these guys to figure out how to play team basketball. You know, and he was in the right mindset because he almost handpicked who he sort of wanted on this team. Are you surprised that you didn't have the showing that you thought you'd get from LeBron?
No, Jenna, because LeBron has gotten off two slow starts. The NBA and trying to understand the players, it's a little more difficult for a player like LeBron because sometimes he's playing the power forward. Sometimes he's the three. Sometimes he's the point guard. So facilitating, when do I try to put my thumbprint on the game, all those things are very, very difficult at the beginning. There are certain games LeBron will just say, I'm going to take over. Typically, he defers to his teammates. I'm going to try to get them involved. But I'm just going to say to the people, I know it's logical. LeBron James, 8 out of the last 9 years, he's played until the middle of June. So he had off June last year and off most of the spring. Oh, he's going to be fresher. You can't prove that. No one can prove that. People just saying, oh, he's going to be fresher. This dude been in the league 17 years. There's a lot of tread on those tires. And us just automatically thinking, oh, because he was off in the playoffs, he's going to be fresher. To me, I don't subscribe to that theory because I don't believe it. And I know people cannot prove it. It sounds good when you say it. But when you really look at it, old is old.
Well, fresh or not, what is definitely true is the turnovers, and he talked about it after the game, the turnovers most notably in the second half were unacceptable because it wasn't like he's going to the basket and gets a charging foul. That's a turnover. It was being too casual with the basketball, and you showed in the highlight the beautiful fadeaway jumper he hit to open the game. That's the only shot outside of 15 feet he hit the whole night. So his shot was a little off. He was casual with the basketball, and the Clippers, listen, Kawhi's obviously their best player, and when Paul George comes back, he will be their best player. But this team takes on the personality of Patrick Beverley, and it has for a couple years now. Beverley is an absolute menace, and you saw that infectious energy throughout the rest of that Clippers team once again, like you did last year in the playoff series.
Yep, and
against
scrappy
the Warriors.
And Bobby
love Patrick
KD.
Beverley. He is scrappy. But I got to give credit to Doc Rivers. Every Doc Rivers team plays like Patrick Beverley. Now, it's a perfect match,
yes.
Patrick Beverley, and he's got the backup, all right? Because you can be as tough as you want to. If you don't have like-minded people, like-minded organizations, so Patrick Beverley probably is feeling more empowered than ever before in his career. And their roles, they don't change that much. That's why Kawhi or Paul George was such a great fit for the Clippers. There are other players. Just do exactly what you were doing. They got those 60 points off the bench. That's what they've been doing the last couple years.
Hey guys, Nick right here to talk about Lightstream credit card bills. Every month you get them with multiple payments and multiple due dates. Wouldn't it be easier to just have one payment at a lower rate? Well, you can with a credit card consolidation loan from my friends at Lightstream. Get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay, lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. Plus, the rate is fixed, so it will never go up over the life of the loan. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with no fees, and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Just for First Things First listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/FTF. That's lightstream.com/FTF. Of course, subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/FTF for more information.
San Francisco 49ers are off to an impressive 6-0 start with a defense giving up under 11 points per game and a quarterback quietly playing some good football. Their weakness, though, has been at wide receiver. That until yesterday when the Niners sent a third and a fourth round pick to Denver for Pro Bowl wideout Emmanuel Sanders and a fifth rounder. Jimmy G needed a target. It appears he now has one. So, Chris Carter, what'd you make of this trade for the 49ers?
The 49ers had to make a trade. They've been looking at wide receivers the last couple years, haven't pulled the trigger on any of those. We thought about a year ago that they would look into OBJ. Bringing him to San Francisco with this young team because we knew they had potential defensively. Offensively, Jimmy Garoppolo, we didn't know enough about him, but they still didn't have a marquee receiver. Now, for them, the reason how they've been able to survive is by a dominant running game and George Kittle. George Kittle is the second best tight end that we have in pro football, and he's probably one of the most underrated guys that we have. Coming out of Iowa, only a fifth round pick in 2017, he has been sensational. Has unbelievable hands, has unbelievable speed. But everyone else that they have at wide receiver, you can go down the list from Debo, Samuel.
Debo Samuel, you got it.
From Dante South Carolina. Pettis, Samuel is a project from South Carolina. He was a second round pick. Mm-hmm. Pettis is a project who looked good last year, ended up being hurt a couple years ago, hadn't been able to get back to full speed. And if you look at Marquise Goodwin, he was running in the Olympics.
Tracks.
I mean, he's got blazing speed. All these guys are a little undersized. All these guys have speed and quickness. They don't have an NFL receiver, a professional route runner, and that's what Emmanuel Sanders is. If you look at offensively what they do, they run the ball, they force the defense into the middle of the field. Emmanuel Sanders is going to get more one-on-one coverage, free access off the line of scrimmage to be able to work, especially because he's a flanker. He plays to the same size as the same side of the offense as the tight end. Him and George Kittle, they should get real explosive real quick.
Explain that to the audience, if you would, see, because I think people hear you say how their wide receiver room is not very good, and then Sanders gets there, and they think, well, he's going to get all the attention of the defense. Why is he going to get?
Because how they play football. They're going to make everyone be in the middle of the field. You have to play with seven or eight in the box. You can only play a couple coverages.
You got to respect the run.
You can play three. You can play cover one. You can play zero. Emmanuel Sanders has been double covered. He's been a lot of cover, too. He's played in prolific offenses there in Denver. So he is a great match. Now, he's not a wide receiver without an ego, but he's at the stage of his career. All he wants to do is win. He's made a lot of money. So he's a good fit with this young receiving group in that locker room because all the other receivers, and until Emmanuel Sanders came there, their best receiver is Jalen Hurd. He was a running back from Tennessee that they converted to wide receiver, and he's scheduled to come off injured reserve in a couple weeks. So big move by John Lynch, getting a wide receiver that's not overpriced, still has a couple years left, and would be very, very good in their locker room with a very, very young football team.
So I want to talk about Emmanuel Sanders first and then the Niners. With Sanders, he's 32 years old, and you wonder if the statistical decline the last few years is a product of a player, 10 years into the league who's all of a sudden getting close to the end, or is a product of the absolutely abysmal quarterback play that we've seen in Denver up to and including the final year of Peyton Manning, when it was Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler, because the last year Emmanuel had really good quarterback play, he was a Pro Bowl caliber player. Now, that also was age-wise when he should be in the prime years of his career. So that is yet to be seen. For the Niners, Richard Sherman talking about don't jump on the bandwagon. The thing that has prevented me from jumping on the undefeated Niners bandwagon is their lack of potency in the passing game. Every other aspect of their team, to me, is A-minus or above. Even with injuries on their offensive line, they have a dominant offensive line. They were up until recently averaging, they went through a stretch where they're averaging 200 yards rushing per game over a month of football. We know how good that defense is, and I think Kyle Shanahan is a hell of a play caller and a really good coach. Problem is, Jimmy G hasn't been very good, and the passing game hasn't been very good. How much of Jimmy G lack of effectiveness has been all he has is the tight end to throw to. Now we'll get a little bit more of this information. Much like with the Patriots adding Mohamed Sanu, I don't feel either one of these teams added. It's not Antonio Brown coming over. It's not an all-pro caliber guy, but he does become the most established and I would argue most talented receiver in that room. That is, it is the one position of need for the Niners, and they addressed it the best they realistically could have.
But we know that with Mohamed Sanu matching up with Tom Brady, that's immediately going to have an impact. He needed a receiver. Mm-hmm. He got one.
Yep.
We don't know that much about Jimmy Garoppolo because, as Nick said, we haven't seen – he didn't need to be that good because of how good their defense has played, and the team is quietly off to a great start. How much of an impact will Sanders have immediately with Jimmy Garoppolo for them to get on the same page the way he was with Kittle all season?
Well, it becomes difficult. The one thing I would just slow down some of the optimism for both these teams. In New England – Josh McDaniel, Tom Brady, they have one of the most sophisticated offenses in the league. It's going to take some time. We talked about yesterday how, yes, both of these guys, they're professionals. Both of them are great locker room guys. Both of them play a variety of positions. Kyle Shanahan, I would say, runs the most complicated offense. So how long is it going to take them at midseason? And I don't know, is there some Kyle Shanahan in Emmanuel Sanders as far as him understanding what this offense is that gets him up to speed a little bit quicker? So for me, this is not the NBA.
Right.
This is still the NFL.
Okay.
No OTAs, no training camp. First time that they've seen these offenses, it might take some time for them to get up to speed. But any quarterback, being young or old, wants an accomplished wide receiver that knows his depths, knows the timing, and can get open. And Emmanuel Sanders, I believe that his decrease in stats is more based on the personnel he was playing with, the teams he was playing with, the variety of coordinators he went through, let alone head coaches and quarterbacks. So for me, in the situation he's been in, I don't see how he could have had great numbers.
And one thing John Lynch knows is another thing the Niners have in common with the Patriots is a backloaded schedule, especially as far as the defenses they're going to be facing. From here, this point forward, they play Carolina, they play Seattle twice, they play Green Bay, they play Baltimore, they play New Orleans, they play the Rams, who just acquired Jalen Ramsey, obviously. They are going to need to do more offensively than just run the football if they are going to stay in the pole position for a bye in the NFC, where I know they have the best record in the NFC. I don't think many people right now consider them the best team in the NFC. I think New Orleans and or Green Bay would be, in most people's opinion, ahead of them because of their potency in the passing game. We'll see how much he can help this.
Do you agree? Did they quickly become the best team in the NFC yesterday?
No, absolutely. Aaron Rodgers and what they got going on in Green Bay.
They're a strong third.
All right. A year ago, the Cowboys made a blockbuster trade, Pro Bowl wideout Amari Cooper for a first-round pick. Well, at the time, there was some question as to whether they gave up too much for Cooper, but Cooper has more than earned his worth on this team, and Jerry Jones knows it, which is why he doesn't think the team needs to make another big move this season. See, you agree with Jerry. Do the Cowboys have enough to go the distance as currently constructed, obviously, if they all stay healthy?
Well, they don't have the flexibility to even try to maneuver to get another player. They've been positioning themselves for a run right now. You're right. A year ago, they made the trade to be able to make them have a run to last year. And that's why they had high expectations on this season. But to them, it's about health and their players that they have. And they have a bunch of young players playing to the level that they're capable of playing. DeMarcus Lawrence playing to the level you played at last week. Now, I know you're coming off off-season shoulder surgery, but they're paying you a lot of money. You're making more money than Ezekiel Elliott. A hell of a lot more than Dak Prescott.
Yeah, about 20
and,
times.
And you ain't even getting no type of criticism. So typically, when teams aren't playing well, we miss it a lot as far as not criticizing the players. The film would say Dallas has a lot of good players that are not playing up to their capabilities. That's, to me, if they reach their potential or get back to where they were last year, I believe that this Dallas Cowboys is talented enough to challenge anyone we have in the league.
We know Dak at some point, we don't know when that point is, going to get a new deal, right? They, in theory, also would like to bring back Byron Jones. They've already re-signed Lyle Collins. Zeke, you mentioned DeMarcus Lawrence. The Cowboys now, they're done with the flashy big of trades or offseason acquisitions. Now they're going to have to supplement their roster through what you would trade away, your draft picks. They need cheap, young labor, essentially, because they're going to be such a top-heavy roster. So this is the right messaging point, and it's the right, it's accurate information. There is no great trade for the Cowboys to make because unlike a team like New Orleans this year or the Patriots, where you've got a quarterback whose time horizon is coming soon to a close, they want to be able to compete not only this year, but over the life of whatever contract Dak gets, over the life of whatever contract Zeke gets. Now, are they good enough? I said on Monday, and I'll say it again, I think the Cowboys, when fully healthy, when their frontline guys are all out there or almost all out there, they can compete with anybody. Their problem has been lack of depth and lack of ability to, when one of those key ingredients is out, to still operate at even close to the level they need to. We saw them, with a couple guys out, lose to the Jets. We then saw what the Jets looked like, same team, a week later against the Patriots. That's concerning for Dallas. They can go that hot, that cold, depending on whether their tackles are out there or not, as you saw them against the Jets versus against the Eagles.
And it's not just that the team struggles when one of them is out. We see that Dak also struggles when his wide receiver is out, when his running back is out, when his left tackle is out. And there are certain things he needs for him to seemingly play at an optimum level. I think that is something that's concerning. Is there a unit on this Dallas Cowboys team that you see as a weakness where if they had the ability, they could bolster?
Well, they're tight ends. Their tight ends are the weakest unit. They don't have any speed at tight end, and they become very, very predictable as far as what the skill level. Their second weakest position happens to be where they have the most resources. That's the offensive line. The wide receiving core has improved a great deal, but they haven't been consistent. Michael Gallup, after a first good game, good start in week, gets injured in week number two. He's been inconsistent. Cobb's been injured. They've been pushed where Tavon Austin has to play more snaps. That last play, they are going for a two-point conversion against the Jets. You got Witten, Tavon Austin, Ezekiel Elliott. Those were the main receivers in a tripod. To the right, in the slot, and Ezekiel Elliott to the left in the slot. Like, that's not a lot of firepower. So the offensive line, they spent a lot of money on. They haven't played to their potential. And when you have two tackles out, it's going to affect your quarterback. Tom Brady missing offensive linemen, it's affected him. Any quarterback, the number one way to affect him is that offensive line not be able to block. So this is not just a Dak issue. This is around the league. Kirk Cousins, when did he have problems? When that offensive line wouldn't protect for him. So I would say this offensive line, it's really key. Because they affect Dak more than anything else. We see Amari Cooper. He's healthy. Zeke had his best game last week. Right. They should be ready to take that next step as an offense.
The New England Patriots. Sure, Tom Brady's team is undefeated. And, yeah, if he struggles, he can rely on that top-ranked defense. But New England is never satisfied. Yesterday, they traded a second-round pick to the Falcons for wide receiver Mohamed Sanu. And both Brady and Sanu are already meshing, with Sanu tweeting Brady's patented LFG and Brady responding with "see you soon," to which Sanu commented, "on my way." It's a three-word minimum, apparently, on Twitter between these two. See, how badly did Brady and the Patriots need this trade?
They needed someone. And I think that once you get the specifics of the personality and the character of the player, Tom should be excited. But this is what Tom does. Tom is the ultimate company man, not only as far as the salaries that he's allowed them to be able to function. Tom says all the right stuff. Last 2 weeks, hey, what about Gronk? Man, I don't participate in those decisions. Would you like to see Gronk? Have you talked to Gronk? Tom stays in his lane. The reason why is because he doesn't want to have a conflict between his relationship with the owner, his love for playing football, and Bill Belichick being owner, CEO, partially //, I run everything in New England. So, Tom, that's what I expect to see from Tom. This is what he's done. Randy Moss reached out to him. All the other receivers, other players reached
told
out.
Told Antonio he could move into his house.
Oh, come on.
Move into his house.
Yes. I know Giselle hadn't seen his rap sheet before Tom had extended all that, but it's a team sport. I always say this. This is not golf. This is not tennis. You just can't act like a jerk, just treat people any kind of way. Tom needs his teammates. He needs that guy to come in that locker room and have some confidence. And Tom is one of the best leaders all time in any sport. That's why you send off. That's why I'm on my way. Absolutely, I'm on my way. To play with the greatest quarterback ever, he goes from Matty Ice to Tom Brady, a chance to win a Super Bowl. Like, what else would a wide receiver want?
I agree with 1,000% about Tom Brady, that the team stuff and leadership, I echo all of it. To your question directly about how much do the Patriots need him, man, we thought the Patriots were going to have issues at the wide receiver core when Josh Gordon was in the fold. I now wonder how much in the fold he is, how serious that injury is, and when he comes back from the injury, how much of the Josh Gordon we faintly remember is still there after missing so much time.
I can tell you New England does not have confidence in him because there's no way you spend a first-round pick
on N'Keal Harry.
The first time Belichick has done that since his Cleveland days, yep, on a wide receiver, and the wide receiver has struggled during training camp. You put him on injured reserve. You know he's not going to be available for the first 8 to 10 weeks of the season. And then you trade another second-round pick?
Right.
I mean, Belichick loved them draft picks more than his kids now. And he's got a couple kids to work on the staff. So to me, that speaks to me. A lot of times we have to follow the tea leaves.
Sure.
They will tell you what the Patriots are saying. And when you trade a second-round pick for a backup receiver, the third-best receiver on the Atlanta Falcons, they're letting you know we have wide receivers.
1,000%. And you also know it by watching it. Listen, Edelman is once again having an excellent season. Edelman has almost 500 yards. He's on pace for an 1,100-yard season.
If he plays any more game with Joe Tessitore, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame the way Joe Tessitore.
Man,
good Lord.
The announcers love them some Julian Edelman. That's a separate story. But a lot of that has been, yes, because Edelman's playing well, but also because, pre-snap, I'm sure Brady's looking around. He's like, all right, so Gunnar Olszewski's out here. Can I trust him to be where he needs to be? Jacoby Myers, we've seen him make some sensational plays, but can I trust him to where he needs to be? All right, I know Edelman's going to be where he needs to be. That is something I don't think he's going to have instantly with Mohamed Sanu, but he is going to have it at some point with Mohamed Sanu because, as you said yesterday, he is a professional receiver. He knows where he needs to be and can run the whole route tree. And for the Patriots, I'm not going to be moved off this point until there is evidence to show it. Their offense right now is limited. Their offense right now is feasting off of short fields, 22 turnovers forced by the opposition, 5 touchdowns scored by defense and special teams, inflating their overall
points. But this proves you're right, how much they needed.
Well, I think it adds to the evidence that that Belichick, after spending a first-round pick on a wide receiver, went out and spent a second-round pick on a wide receiver.
That last Monday night game was embarrassing. Tom Brady, the greatest football player we ever have. We're celebrating 100 seasons of NFL. Those receivers are garbage. Now, God bless them. They in the league. But they shouldn't be playing with Tom Brady. And that was the embarrassment. Yeah, God bless them. I mean, they in the league. Yeah. They one of the 1,600 best players in the world. Yeah. But, hey, listen now. This is all kinds of manure in the ocean now. You got some deeper than the other.
Like, God bless them. They're in the league.
He shouldn't have to be subjected to playing with guys like that.
And you can't do anything about the offensive line. That's no one's fault. They just suffered injuries. It's not like they said, hey, Brady, we got you no offensive lineman this year.
Isaiah Wynn is going to be injured forever.
They spent a first-round pick on Isaiah Wynn. He's been hurt twice. They had an excellent center. He got hurt for the first time. That just happens. The wide receiver situation, they have tried to address it. Now, they got him a good wide receiver once upon a time recently, Brandon Cooks. They used him for a year and then said, nope, we bought at this price. We can sell at this price even if we maybe should hold it. This is going to be an issue for them. And we have talked all about the offenses they faced as far as inflating their defensive stats. It should be noted, they haven't faced no great defenses all year long except for Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And Buffalo was right there with them. Buffalo, it was a one-score game that they won because of a blocked punt for a touchdown. The Patriots are obviously the best coached team in football. They obviously have the best defense in football. And they obviously have the greatest quarterback of all time on the roster. No one disputes all that. but their passing game is going to be limited unless the wide receiver room gets substantially better, and it got a little bit better 24 hours ago.
Well, there's a difference between a little bit better and substantially better. Did it get a little bit better, or did it get substantially better with Mohamed Sanu?
Substantially better. Mohamed Sanu, these guys can't wear Mohamed Sanu's shoes. He can play every position. He can play the X, the boundary receiver. He can play the Z to the tight end side. He can play in the slot. He's a great teammate. He's a consistent route runner. He always gets his depth. He's been great as a role player since he's been in the league when he was second fiddle to A.J. Green, Julio Jones. And you know what they did for him? He was so good in Atlanta, they drafted another receiver from Alabama to move him to number three. You never heard a peep about him. He's great on and off the field. Tom Brady should be excited because he is so much better than what they have.
First things first, having a good time with two-time NBA champ and 11-time All-Star Chris Bosh. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Proud to announce something, by the way.
Go for it.
Chris Bosh officially now friend of the show. Third appearance makes you officially friend of the show.
Yeah, okay.
So not
right,
just friend. Hall of Fame.
Like,
what's
going on? I didn't even know. I
so thought, we can just say friend of the show, Chris
Welcome.
Bosh. Good to see you.
All right,
five.
Great. That's awesome. New thing to the title. That's awesome.
Beautiful. Love it. All right, let's talk some NBA opening night. Chris Bosh, friend of the show. What was the key to the Clippers' win last night?
I mean, I'm going to say the bench. 60-19 Outscored him. Montrez Harkless and
Lou.
Sorry.
Montrez Harrell.
Harrell. And Lou Will coming off the bench. I mean, Montrez, he's just a monster in the paint.
Harkless is nice, too.
Harkless,
a lot of people know all points on him. He was a starter there in Portland.
Yep.
He adds to that bench. Oh, man, he adds a lot of flavor to them. Yes.
But I think the main thing was the bench. You saw the Lakers come out swinging. It's a hyped-up game, a lot of excitement. I do disagree with LeBron. It is a rivalry. Anytime you're in a situation, since we've been in middle school and high school, the rivalry was your crosstown team, you 9 times out of 10, if not all times. But, you know, you have to give credit to the bench. The stars did what they need to do. Everybody's trying to figure things out. But when Lou Will comes in, I mean, he gets into that rhythm. That's what's going to make L.A. very, very dangerous. The Clippers, I'm speaking of.
Well, and I disagree with LeBron on a separate point where he says, you know, neither one of us did exactly what we want to do. I tell you right now, the Clippers, they will sign up 30 from Kawhi, 60 from the bench. You got 90. How many you need? Paul George didn't even play. Right. You only going to need, what, in that situation, you need, what, 25 points from the rest of your starting five?
And the way they play defense, how many points you going to score?
Well, that's the other aspect of it. I actually thought both teams played really well defensively in this game. I thought LeBron was more engaged defensively than I'd seen him in a regular season game in a very long time. We'll see if he's able to sustain that over the course of the season. But the story was, to me, the Lakers, they came out great. And then they had a flurry in the third quarter led by Danny Green, who had lit fire.
He was unconscious. Yeah.
Aside from that, they were casual with the basketball. Anthony Davis, who clearly was going to have a huge size advantage all night long, after the first half was not able to reestablish that, was not able to take advantage of that. And the Clippers just kept coming. There was no break. You could see for the Lakers when they went to their bench unit, when all of a sudden my pal Jared Dudley and KCP and Troy Daniels and Quinn Cook are out there, or three of those four, that's an opportunity for the Clippers to create some separation. When the Clippers' strength is their bench unit and those guys are out there without Kawhi, can't rest when Kawhi's out there. You can't take a break then. You're not going to be able to take a break when Lou Williams is cooking, when Montrez getting a rebound and Patrick Beverley is just annoying everyone as he does every game of his NBA career. Like, the Clippers were relentless. The Lakers were not able to match that.
And at the end of the game, the Clippers clamped down on them. They stopped fouling, which they did the first half, assisted the Lakers with free throws. AD didn't get fouled that much the second half. Lakers didn't get fouled, and they shut them down to 17 points in the fourth quarter. Neither one of the stars from the Lakers had enough energy or juice to be able to take over the game, because that's what you expect. We're going to lob, lob, lob. Let's get to the fourth quarter. One of you guys take over the game. Typically, Bron could do it. Last night, he didn't do it. And to me, AD, typically, especially post-play is more taxing on your body than perimeter play. So you could see them throwing the ball into him the first two quarters. He was gassed at halftime. All that posting up, all that wrestling. So for me, I believe that part, at the end of games, he will be in condition and be ready to handle that. So to me, how you close out these games? The game was very, very even. This is going to be a rivalry. Even before LeBron James, he's going to be late to get there, but it is going to be a rivalry. I guess LeBron feels like he controls everything. It's not a rivalry until I say so.
Right. Okay.
Okay, yeah. There was a lot of intensity for these two teams to be meeting the first night of the season, and neither one of them repeating champions. Lakers hadn't been in the playoffs in a minute.
All right, Crystal, let's talk about and stay with the Clippers for a second. How good, after what you saw last night, could this team be once Paul George gets back?
I mean, you know, the goal should be NBA championship for these guys. I mean, if you look at it from top to bottom, you know, they're well coached. Their staff is great. They've got great ownership. Steve Ballmer has been very, very vocal in his ambitions to win. They've got two superstars, you know.
Without putting too much pressure on one of those superstars who will be coming back.
Well, I mean,
clearly.
You know, yeah, it's always pressure when you come back, but they can take pressure off of each other. And Paul George can maybe not feel like he has to come plug in right away and start averaging 20 or 30 points right away.
Yeah, I think
that'll be better for him.
Two superstars you're right about, but I think the mix of their personalities. Paul George has accomplished enough in this league that he's got him and Kawhi decided to play together. They aren't supposed to be together. They've been talking the last couple of years, but Kawhi was like, I'm not going to the Lakers. Y'all need to call Paul George. And Paul George is like, whoa, really? That's the first time out publicly that someone said they wanted Paul George. LeBron wanted him in Cleveland, but they couldn't get him from the Pacers. So for me, with a shoulder injury, the type of player Paul George is, you know what he's going to be able to do the first game? Lock someone up. You think they couldn't have needed that last night? His three-point shooting, he adds length to their offense. So to me, their personalities. If either one of these guys was coming back from an injury because they are the two superstars with less ego than the other groups of superstars that we have, because every player does have some ego. So I'm confident that they will gel quicker. And bad shoulders, man. Guys come back from bad shoulders, especially perimeter players.
And one of the reasons I think the Clippers looked as good as they did last night was because when you watched them last year, this was that team. This team didn't go through a reinvention the way the Lakers did. Lakers got three guys from last year that played last night. LeBron, JaVale, and KCP. Everyone else that played is brand new. As far as the Clippers guys that were notable guys last night, Zubats, he played, I know he started center, but he barely played. He's new. Harkless, who you mentioned, is new. And, of course, Kawhi is new. But what you inserted in Kawhi was a zero-maintenance superstar who's going to take over a scoring load and be the best defender on the court at almost all times. So everyone else knows how to play with each other. Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams know how to be the leaders of one of the best bench units in basketball because that's what they were last year. And to me, you saw some of that familiarity last night with the Clippers, and that will serve them well even when they add another piece, of course, Paul George, in a month or so.
Yeah, they'll be pretty good. Yeah. I think they'll be.
Here, first things first, we're joined by Super Bowl champ Greg Jennings. Hey, Greg.
What's up, man?
Great to see you this morning.
Great to be seen.
We are talking MVP odds in the NFL. According to Fox Bet, Greg, Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson are now tied as favorites at plus 275 to take home the MVP honors. Both quarterbacks have carried their teams to great respective starts this season. That means odd man out becomes Patty Mahomes. Who's better bet to win MVP, Rodgers or Wilson?
If I'm betting, I'm going with Aaron Rodgers. I like what he's been able to do. Team has a better record, and he's doing it with not his number one guy. Mm-hmm. They've established a running game. He's entering into this season with a new head coach, new system. All these odds were kind of against whether or not it would work, or I shouldn't even say the odds. Myself and others probably questioned or had questions about whether the relationship would work, and it's working phenomenally. Mm-hmm. And it's all predicated on his demeanor, his posture towards everything. And it's been unbelievable. His stats that he's putting up, the two interceptions that he has on the stat sheet, they really don't even belong to him. He had the one against Philly that got tipped at the goal line.
Yep.
He had the one against Detroit that got dropped and then intercepted.
At the goal line.
Hit the dude in the face, man.
Yeah, so, I mean, he would be interceptless if it weren't for those two. And the way he's throwing the football right now, vintage Aaron Rodgers, what's been most impressive is he's not doing it in a manner of, I have to be everything for my team.
Ad-libbing.
Yes.
Throwing on schedule.
He's doing everything that Matt LaFleur could ever ask for him to do and more. I love what the defense is doing. They got to get better for him and not giving up the big plays, but I like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, both of these quarterbacks, it's hard to be able to, how am I going down the stretch? Because it's based on how the team plays.
Yes.
I believe Aaron's going to have more help. And with more help, he's got a more established running game. Even though Seattle has a more running culture, Aaron has the more talented running backs. I believe Aaron Jones can be a special player, continuing to use him in the passing game. Also, Devontae Adams is better than any receiver that Seattle and Russell Wilson will have. So I believe the defense in Green Bay is a lot better than the defense in Seattle. And those types of things right there lead to having the MVP type season. The slow start by Aaron Rodgers. Offense being expanded through weeks 3 through week 7. You could start to see, oh, wow. And they're doing that without their best receiver. So for me, Aaron Rodgers is likely to get better. And Seattle is likely, and Russ is likely to come back to the pack.
And you made a point when we were discussing this in the past, and I think it's a good one to remind the audience, that in the NFL MVP, at least in recent history, it's been part and parcel, not just with the quarterback position, but with your team having an extraordinary record.
Yes.
If you look at Pat Mahomes was the one seed. You had, when Matt Ryan won it, they had a bye. When Cam won it, they had a bye.
Yes.
When Brady won it most recently, they, of course, had a bye. So if you think the Packers are likely to go 13-3 and Seattle's likely to be a wild card team, if they, you know, assuming they get in, that speaks in Aaron Rodgers' favor. Now, I should say this in the beginning. Before the year, I picked Aaron Rodgers to win the MVP. And I still think right now this them being dead even is ridiculous. This is, up until last week, Rodgers was not in the conversation at all. He had 8 touchdowns to those 2 interceptions, even though those 2 were not his fault, agreed. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson had 14 touchdowns to no interceptions. Up to last week, Russell Wilson, given the injury to Patrick Mahomes, was the runaway leader in this category. Now, Russell has his worst game of the year, his first bad game since last December. Aaron Rodgers has one of the best games of his career, and they're dead even. One week can erase the margin that Russ had built up over the first 6 weeks. I think that's unfair. I think Russell has been the best player in the league up to this point this season. I think he still should be, if we were awarding it right now, he would be the league MVP. Can he sustain it? That's where the odds come in, and I understand that part of it.
Yeah, maybe we should stay away from the MVP till midseason.
Well, we're at midseason, aren't we?
Well, I mean, but we had been hyping up for 4 weeks.
Okay.
Because we had Patty Mahomes running away with it.
Right.
Russell came into the race. Patty Mahomes faded a little bit. Aaron Rodgers came from nowhere. So that's a lot happening in 7 weeks.
Could there be some weight given to the fact that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers have played much heftier opponents than Seattle has so far, that the defenses that Aaron Rodgers has gone against have been far superior than the one that you've seen that Russell Wilson has seen? Does that factor in at all when it comes to who we're discussing for MVP?
It definitely will factor in, but I think more than anything, it's really going to be about who we see and who shines in those moments. What I mean by that is, in primetime games, Aaron Rodgers has looked great and his team has won.
Yeah.
And so you bring up one of the greatest points I think I will hear when it comes to MVP, the help that he has going down the stretch. It's not always about the talent and the play of the individual, because obviously if you're in the MVP conversation, you're a great player.
Yes.
And so with your help that you can get and acquire from your roster, the guys that are on the field with you, that enhances your opportunity.
Absolutely.
And your chances, to your point, going to the schedule as a team or the record as an overall team, to better your chances and opportunity of winning an award like that.
And that's why Rodgers, and that's why Russell Wilson, have a better chance than Patty Mahomes. It ain't based on the schedule, what they think they're going to do. Patty Mahomes, now people know Tyreek Hill is a star. Travis Kelce is a star.
Yes.
Sammy Watkins is amazing when he's healthy. So look at the difference in what Russell's throwing to and what Aaron had to deal with in the first part of the season. So I think those things, too, separate some of the people when they will vote for this.
Well, and that, to me, is another thing that is a feather in Russell Wilson's cap. Is we have talked about how the deck's been stacked against Aaron the last couple weeks because he hasn't had Devontae Adams. Well, Russell Wilson's been without his number one receiver all year long. His number one receiver was Doug Baldwin. He retired. Now, he has turned Tyler Lockett into, they seem to have some mind meld connection,
they
where they are now going on a 23-game streak of when Russell targets Lockett, he has a perfect quarterback rating. No other quarterback wide receiver combo has a quarterback rating better than 130. Theirs is still a 158.3. But that is, Tyler Lockett is not a true number one receiver on any other team.
No, they don't have a number one.
Right. And so he's almost been pressed into service as the number one receiver. Russell lost his tight end, who Will Dissly was having a nice year, to a torn Achilles a couple years ago. So I understand we give Aaron credit, and rightfully so, for doing it with a kind of, wait, who's that wide receiving core? Right. That has been the story for Russell all year long.
LeBron James, in his 17th season, the King finished with 18 points, 9 boards, 8 assists. His new teammate, Anthony Davis, showed up in game one. The Brow had 25 points, 10 boards, 5 assists. But the Lakers falling to Kawhi and the Clippers, 112-102. Here is AD on playing with LeBron.
It's weird. We're both aggressive. And so sometimes we kind of like miss each other. You know, I missed him a couple times, and he missed me. So just trying to figure it out, you know, knowing that we're going to draw a double team, knowing what everyone else is. When you got two guys who are willing passers, you know, it makes it a little bit easier. But, you know, we're still learning. You know, like I said, it's game one, you know, of many. So we're going to look at the film and see what we can get better at, and then work on it in practice and get ready for our next game.
I think we all just assumed, at least I did, Anthony Davis is an incredible player. LeBron James is an incredible player. It'll take them less than a fraction of a nanosecond to put two great players together and vibe and make it work. But how long do you think it'll take for them to really gel and make it work as a team, Nick?
Well, I mean, I think for them to reach their full potential, it's going to take a few months. It's going to take 40, 50 games together. For them to actually gel, I think they were gelling somewhat last night. I don't think last night was a function of these two guys not knowing how to play with each other. LeBron was careless with the basketball. Anthony Davis, to Chris's point, seemed to run out of steam a little bit. One of the reasons Anthony Davis doesn't want to play center is because of the exhaustion it is banging bodies every time.
I told you that.
Right.
He ain't built for that.
And it's not what he wants to do. And in the first half, because of how small the Clippers lineup was, even if he had another big man on the court, he was having center-like possessions with a bunch of post-ups, and you saw it wear on him to where he wasn't as effective late in the game. I don't think this was a LeBron and Anthony Davis failing to gel issue. LeBron didn't play well, independent of his teammates. But this was a bit of this Lakers team not yet fully gelling. You've got a totally new roster. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Kyle Kuzma are the only players who've been on this team longer than LeBron. LeBron got there 15 months ago. And so you have, just from last year, the only guys who were on the roster last year are JaVale, KCP, and LeBron as far as who played, because Kuzma obviously didn't play. So there's a lot of rotations that you're not used to. There's a lot of, who's cutting where that you're not used to. And I think that led to some of the turnovers. And I just think it was a sloppy, inefficient game from LeBron, which leads us to, are LeBron and Anthony Davis not gelling already? To me, that wasn't the story of what happened last night.
Right. When we went into the season, when you analyze who the Clippers are, who the Lakers are, for what we know, on paper, we know the Clippers and their bench mob is going to be an issue for any team in the league. They have been a problem. Lou Williams, sixth man of the year, 3 times. Yeah. Last year, back-to-back. So we know that any bench is going to have a problem. We thought that their bench was better than the Lakers, and that might give them an edge. If you thought that the superstars were even, most people think that LeBron and AD do have the edge. This was 60-19. We're talking about AD, we're talking about LeBron, but when you have that much of a difference in bench scoring compared to your starters, like you're going to have an issue. Also, Dwight Howard, is he going to be able to score enough as a backup front court player? I believe they have enough shooting in the backcourt. I believe their guards and stuff. Rondo was out of this game, not from a scoring, but from a continuity standpoint. So those are the things that I would question. AD, he can't play the center extended minutes, because when you play a post position, they allow you to get away with a lot of unnecessary physicality that they don't allow the perimeter players to get away with. That's one of the reasons, and that's what AD has communicated, why he doesn't like playing the five. So regardless of what people think their basketball philosophy is, Giannis doesn't play five for a reason. I mean, he's tall enough, but he doesn't have the body for it. This is what's best for AD. It's best for him to play the power forward as much as possible because it makes him fresher at the end of the games. And when they needed someone to close out the game, LeBron was not fresh and AD was not fresh.
So what is it then, Nick, if it's going to take 40, 50 games for the whole team actually to gel? What is it going to take for them to at least get out to the strong start, which you say they absolutely need to do?
Oh, I think not playing the Clippers will help. I think LeBron not having five turnovers and what was he, 7 of 19 from the field?
Made one shot beyond 15 feet.
And it was very early in the game, a very difficult contested baseline fadeaway that I think we've shown in the highlights. To me, this Lakers team is not that complicated until we get to a 7-game series against a really good opponent where there's a lot of machinations. Who do you play? Who do you not? Who's in the rotation? They need to be able to play 48 minutes a night where they have the best player on the court. They had last night almost 0 minutes with the best player on the court, or I guess only 16 minutes, if you will, because when Kawhi was out there, he was the best guy throughout. Even when the second quarter, which was Anthony Davis's best quarter, Kawhi was superb in that quarter. LeBron was not even an all-star caliber player last night. I am not concerned that is going to continue. If it does continue, then they're no championship-level team. So that's why I'm not trying to reject your question at all. I just don't think that was the issue. I don't think the issue was, it's not like they do a high pick and roll, LeBron thinks Anthony Davis is rolling to the rim and he throws a lob to nobody. It's that they were sloppy with the basketball, and LeBron couldn't hit an outside shot, and Anthony Davis wore down, I think probably because first game of the season, against a team that is guarding you 94 feet, against an exhausting team to play against. That, to me, was the story of last night, plus the bench scoring. You get outscored by 40 on the bench. Your two superstars better play one hell of a game. Anthony Davis played a B-level game. LeBron played a C-minus D-plus level game. You're going to lose when Kawhi goes 36-5 and the bench gives you 60 for the Clippers.
Yeah, and I do believe that the Clippers, not only do they have a bench edge, they have a coaching bench edge. When you talk about Doc Rivers and also Sam Cassell and the guy that the Lakers didn't want to give a long-term contract, Ty Lue. That's who their bench is. That's championship pedigree there. And I would take that bench over Frank Vogel, Jason Kidd, and Lionel Hollins. All right? So you talk about a number of advantages being the bench scoring and overall coaching the Clippers have.
And one of the reasons, listen, the Clippers are going to have a bench edge on almost every team, but one of the reasons last night it was such a big discrepancy is, and I, listen, I'm agnostic on Frank Vogel. We'll see how he does, but I'm not going to kill him for this. He is figuring out in real time what his bench rotation is going to be.
Yeah, of course.
How much can Quinn Cook play? When Caruso's fully healthy, should he play above Quinn Cook? Jared Dudley, for as good of a leader as he is, like Jared Dudley was on the court for 13 minutes, they outscored by 20 points in those 13 minutes. Like Jared Dudley, is he just a locker room guy or can he help?
I don't know what kind of workout program he was doing this offseason.
And so, the same one he's been doing his whole career, it was here. And so, like, these are things that are going to have to be figured out in real time. I do think the LeBron Anthony Davis thing is going to be fine. The other pieces are going to have to fall into place.
The other luxury gem of the Clippers, they don't have that 40 games because that bench mob, they've been playing together.
Yes.
Montrezl Harrell and they play in the summer league together. So that chemistry in there and that will pay huge dividends to them getting out to a great start.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Let's move on to the Warriors. Haven't talked about them in a while. Klay Thompson suffered a torn ACL in Game 6 of the Finals last season. And though the hope was to get him back by the All-Star break this year, that might not be the case, with Steve Kerr saying it's unlikely that he's going to play this year. Well, Kerr would then walk that back slightly, saying, we'll leave the door open. Nick, how far can Steph carry the Warriors if Klay cannot come back?
Quickly on Kerr, I think Kerr's doing the right thing. They don't want to make the same mistake they made with Durant.
He already made a mistake.
Which part? The first part or the second part? Walking it back?
But him saying that he was going to be out.
Well, I think they did that so they can just set it aside so he's not constantly asked for updates on Klay Thompson. But now when he walks it back, he's going to be asked for updates on Klay Thompson either way.
Right. So, he should have just said, we don't know. He got hurt in June. You don't have to answer. Like, the media is not that savvy that you, oh, that was such a hard question, I got to answer. No, I don't know when he's going to be back. The probability of him playing, we don't know what it is.
Fair.
And if he had said that.
This part's a non-story. Understood. So but on to your, with Klay not out there, how good can the Warriors be? To me, there's five teams in the West that are clearly better than everybody. We'll see the order.
Wait, this is without Klay in the lineup?
There's five: Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, Jazz, and I'm leaving an obvious
Rockets?
One out in the Rockets. Thank you. And then there's a sixth in the Blazers that say, we think we should be right in that conversation. We were in the conference finals last year. So then there's two spots open at the bottom of the playoffs. Do I think the Warriors can be that seventh or eighth seed without Klay? I do. Now they're going to struggle defensively. They are going to be a bad defensive team for the first, not just not a top 10, five defense, top 10 defense. They're going to be a bad defensive team for the first time in the Steve Kerr era. That when you have Steph and D'Angelo as your backcourt, that's going to happen. But I think Steph is sensational. He's not my pick, but see, I would not be shocked if Steph Curry was the league MVP this year.
No.
I think Steph Curry's going to put on a show night in, night out. And so, do I think they could be around 500 throughout the course of the season awaiting Klay's return? Yes, to me that keeps them alive. Now, can they compete to win a series without Klay Thompson? Probably not. Can they compete to get to the conference finals without Klay Thompson? No chance whatsoever. Even if Klay comes back, I don't think they can get through those top teams in the West. But I don't think the Warriors are about to, like what happened with the Spurs, the year Robinson's not there. Oh, well, all of a sudden we get the number one pick, get Tim Duncan. They still have an excellent coach and a superstar in Steph Curry. And Draymond's still there as well, and he got his money. So you're going to also have a happy Draymond Green.
Yeah, Steph Curry is the best offensive player we have. If you tell me who's the best. Well, you got one draft just for an offensive player. Who are you taking? I'm taking Steph. And the reason why I'm taking Steph is not because of his shooting. I'm taking him because what he does off the ball. We saw in the playoffs when Klay was not available, when Durant was not available, and Steph didn't have the ball in his hand, he is one of the most dangerous guys you've ever seen don't have the ball. He understands the game. He's in great conditioning. He runs the court. He backpicks. He catches those screens. And he never seems gassed. So for me, he's going to be special, but they just don't have enough firepower the way the Western Conference is stacked up. Also, with him playing all those minutes, with all that offensive productivity, watch out for an injury.
Yes.
Because he does not have the type of frame. He's gotten older, all right? So this type of wear and tear they're going to put on his body, it's going to be new to him during the regular season with the last three or four regular seasons they've been sleepwalking through.
I was just going to say, my issue is that you're going to need Steph to be that good every night, but starting from much earlier in the regular season because you don't have Klay. In the last couple of years, he didn't have to be that good, that consistently, put in that much effort in those many minutes until closer to mid or end of the season.
Yeah, this is welcome to life back in the regular NBA. I mean, this is how it is. Like, nobody's been crying for James Harden. I know he has Russ now. That, hey, man, every night you got to do this? Every night you got to go out there and be great? Yeah, man. Giannis, every night you got to do this? LeBron the first time in Cleveland or the second time in Cleveland? Yes. This is how it works in this league. And he's good enough for it. Now, my concern would have been with or without Klay, Steph and Draymond, five straight 100-game seasons. I know they didn't win the title last year, but they played the same amount of games as if they had won the title. Five straight years in the finals. How does that wear and tear? We've only seen one guy do it, LeBron. And LeBron's built differently. So that's a legitimate concern. But what defenses won't be able to do, while I don't love the D'Angelo Russell fit defensively or long term, what they won't be able to do with D'Angelo out there is what you saw be done to them in the NBA Finals when Klay and KD were out, which was, man, we're going to box and one you. We're gonna triangle and two you at times. We're going to just make sure Steph can do nothing because no one else threatens us. D'Angelo Russell's a good enough scorer that won't happen. And I do think Draymond getting his contract's important for this team as they're going through a bit of a transition period.
Yes. Watch a guy named Marquese Chris. He's really looked well in the preseason. He adds a little punch to center. See if they play him at power forward. He's also should take some of that scoring away. He's not going to get 20 points a game. But I believe when you look at their roster, if you look out there and be like, oh, who's that guy? I believe it's going to be Chris.
Former top 10 pick out of Phoenix, one of the many top 10 picks of Phoenix that went away to be nothing. And Draymond came out and defended him, said, hey, you guys always blame the player. Sometimes it's the organization. They clearly are optimistic he can be a big factor for them.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.